You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Everybody, thank you so much for joining us here on the Paranormal Portal podcast. I just want to take a moment and say thank you as we're celebrating the Thanksgiving holiday in the U.S. It just becomes incumbent to, I guess, reflect quite a bit on what we are thankful for. And first and foremost, we at the Paranormal Portal, Don and myself, are absolutely thankful that all of you all have been a part of our journey and are a part of our vision for the future of the Paranormal Portal. You guys have made this show nothing short of incredible. From years ago when we first turned on the microphone and just started babbling to today with tens of thousands, hundred thousands of listens. And it's just really humbling and it's just amazing. We are absolutely thrilled to be a part of your days and weeks and that we can share your journey in some small way and maybe make a difference. Just if it's just turning on the show to forget about the rest of the things in your life, or if it's something else, you know, whatever the portal does for you, if it's just great entertainment, maybe it's a good joke, a good laugh, whatever it means to you, we are just thrilled to be able to be a part of your experience and a part of your journey, whatever that means. And thank you all so much. And as a special thank you, we're giving you this bonus episode of part two with Donald Schmidt, The Path to Disclosure. It was just an amazing interview. And there are some people that have been on the show, and many of them are you guys out there too, who have just had such amazing information and stories to share and ideas and such. And we're particularly proud of this episode. So we thought that it would be wonderful and a way to say thank you all for being a part of the Paranormal Portal. A special thank you to Revolver Podcasts for getting us out there into your worlds where you can find us. So we love you all, and to all of you, whether you're celebrating Thanksgiving right now or not, just know that we are absolutely amazed and blown away, and we just hope you're doing wonderful wherever you are. So love you guys, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the hour number two of the Paranormal Portal tonight. It's an excellent journey. I don't want this to end. I just don't ever want the show to end because it's just such an amazing discussion. Ladies and gentlemen, today we are joined by our special guest, Mr. Donald Raymond Schmidt, who is joining us. Great opportunity to talk to one of the foremost experts of the Roswell incident, and I mean, he's been in the community for so many years and doing research all over the place. So this is just an amazing opportunity to talk to an amazing man. But welcome back, Don, and I really appreciate
you. You're very kind, Brent. Thank you.
I know you've been all over the globe. You've been just going everywhere, and I know we kind of chopped you off at the break. Was there more that you wanted to finish before I jump into something else here?
I advise even my colleagues, we need to remain very cautious as to the nearing possibility of disclosure. But most of these people are younger, and they don't realize that we've been here before. Mm. And it was before I became involved, and I know that with Dr. Hynek, there were numerous occasions where it appeared as though it was imminent, that he would even be informed by media in the Chicago market, WGN specifically, one of the superstations, that they had just been tipped off from a source in Washington that the president himself was going to make some announcement pertaining to the subject. Mm. And both times, you know, they dangle the carrot and then they pull it away. Huh. And then after Hynek passed away, we had a similar experience where a number of us were informed to be prepared to travel to Washington, that we were not to discuss it between ourselves, but we were to make plans to travel separately through different means, some fly, some train, others a bus, some drive, and rendezvous in Washington, and there would be some form of press conference. Well, that too. As quickly as that sprang out of nothing, it evaporated into nothing. And so we failed to, you know, we failed to study our history. And then as a result, we repeat the errors. And I'm no different than anyone else. I certainly have made my share of mistakes. And it's only because to be, you know, even introduced as an expert on this subject is no such thing.
Sure.
How can you be an expert on the unknown? Then it's no longer unknown. I can be an expert on the history. I can be an expert on the cases that I feel are the best, you know, on a global basis. But to suggest that I have any more answers than anyone else, I guess the difference is at least I'm still in the trenches. I'm still on the battlefield, so to speak. And whenever I have this opportunity, I guess I'm reporting from the front. Mm-hmm. I'm, you know, able to describe firsthand what we have been investigating, what we have been working on. There's so many armchair investigators who they typically believe the last thing that they've read in social media,
yeah,
and they accept it as gospel.
Sure.
And that was the one thing that Dr. Hynek drilled into us, that when it's your own research, when it's your own investigation, no one can take it from you. It's yours. The only thing they can do is express opinions. And I'm not expressing an opinion. I'm mm-hmm. not expressing a belief, because I went from a complete skeptic on this topic to where now I can say that, as I mentioned in the first hour, I'm 99% convinced. Mm-hmm. And that's a result of my efforts.
Right.
What I have experienced, the people that I have had the good, opportunity of tracking down and interviewing, and my colleagues as well. And you just cannot speak to firsthand witnesses who describe handling, you know, materials not manufactured on this earth. And you come away and you go, can't believe it. Won't believe it, anything but extraterrestrial. Or you sit there in awe and you realize, my God, I'm one person removed from somebody who may indeed have actually handled pieces of a genuine craft from mm-hmm. another planet.
Wow. That is so incredible. my next question will have to be, I know you've been an investigator for a long time, and of course this has been a real cornerstone for your career in chasing this narrative and trying to substantiate all of these possibilities in this stream. But you must have been all over investigating several other cases too, huh, through the years?
Well, prior to even making the proposal to the Center for UFO Studies Board of Directors, which I served on for 10 years, I was working on missing time cases. Mm. I was working very closely with Bud Hopkins. I knew John Mack personally. I still to this day know Dr. David Jacobs very closely. And more specifically, I was working with Dr. Hynek on such cases. In fact, the late Stanley V. Mitchell, who was the president of the American Hypnosis Society, mm-hmm. he was the hypnotist who developed battlefield hypnosis during the Korean War. Okay. Now just imagine you're doing surgeries, amputations, in nothing more than a hypnotic trance. Stanley Mitchell developed that. He invented that. And then to see later where I was watching open heart surgeries on film, and the patient is speaking to the doctors wide awake as they're in nothing more than a hypnotic trance, not feeling a thing.
Wow.
And then working with law enforcement agencies and witnesses to a crime would be unable to even give the color of the fleeing vehicle. And then under hypnosis with Stanley Mitchell, not only giving the make and the year, but also the license number, proving to me that what the eyes don't see, the brain does. Mm-hmm. The brain records. Mm-hmm. And that hypnosis is, under the right tutelage, the right hands, a most useful tool. And I can honestly say that with Dr. Hynek, for working with Stanley Mitchell, I was the only other investigator that he enlisted, that he referred to Stanley Mitchell, that I was the only other investigator working with Stanley Mitchell, the mm-hmm. top, the very best in the entire profession. And it was because of Dr. Hynek. So I worked on a number of most profound missing time cases, broad daylight, multiple witnesses involved, able to corroborate the missing time, multiple, you know, multi-generational experiences within a single family, that type of thing. And but the one case that I wanted to go after as a skeptic was Roswell. So I shifted gears. I went from that, and here for the last 30 years, the principal, the primary focus has been Roswell, because to me and to many of my colleagues and to many people around the world, it's clearly the granddaddy of all UFO cases. Within just the last few years, I've lectured in South America, in China, in Japan, in Russia. I'm just back from 4 lectures in Australia. Mm-hmm. And they want to hear about Roswell. What I found, what I was most specifically interested in specifically Melbourne, Australia, was the Westall case that happened in 1966. Middle of the day, broad daylight, next to, it came over a children's playground between a high school and a primary school, an elementary school. Mm-hmm. And it was a, you know, clearly a, like a two inverted, like a pie plate or a saucer with another saucer inverted over it. And it came along a grid of power lines before then hovering over an open area outside the playground. And then it moved away and it went over a hill towards a park area. Well, while that happened, hundreds of high school children started to crawl over the fences, and they were running towards the park, hoping to, you know, see the object more closely while all the young elementary children were screaming and yelling, racing back in the school that, you know, this was, we were being attacked, we were being invaded, that type of thing.
Wow.
So to be there today, within the last 3 weeks, and to meet these people now, middle-aged adults, and talk to them, and go out to the park and see where the object touched down, and to listen to the account of where the one young girl who got there ahead of the others all at once came screaming, racing away in the opposite direction.
Mm.
And how the next Monday, this was a Friday, and this was there was a holiday that weekend. And so she did not return to school the next Monday, nor the next Tuesday, nor the next week, nor the next month.
Mm.
And in fact, when school officials went to her home, there were new occupants of the residence and claimed they had never heard of her or her family ever before.
Oh, my God.
So it was just like she was herself abducted. She was herself, you know, taken away, and her family, as though they were put in protective custody, that type of thing.
Right.
And so the more I'm hearing about this, I'm going, my God, Australia has their own Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
And the most intriguing thing about this, Brent, was the fact that the press was totally shut down. They had a gag order placed on them. There are absolutely no press accounts of this at the time. Hundreds of witnesses, including faculty, the teachers, broad daylight, a craft, you know, that came down within just hundreds of feet of them.
Wow.
And to have a complete news blackout over the situation. And then the most intriguing thing of all the witnesses and the ones that I spoke to personally, I asked, now, who interrogated you? Who told you you could never talk about this again? Who threatened you over this as a young child, as a high school child, back when this happened?
Uh-huh.
You'll never guess who they said controlled and ran the entire investigation and shutdown of the incident.
Their Air Force?
American suits. American.
Oh, wow.
Americans came in and took charge of the investigation and made sure that the case never saw the light of day.
Oh, my God.
And so whenever we hear of foreign cases, my first question invariably is always, were there American suits present?
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm told, yes, there were, then we know it's a good case.
Right.
And so then the next obvious question is, what placed America in the driver's seat? Was it the atomic bomb? Well, no, because Russia, you know, had their own, you know, atomic bomb 4 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And England, you know, they have their own atomic bomb. And so does France. And so does India. And so does Israel. And so does Pakistan. And so does now China. So it obviously isn't the bomb. Well, was it Project Blue Book, which was nothing more than a PR front?
Mm-hmm.
It's so much so that even now when they dramatize it on television, they have to fictionalize it, even just to make it, you know, dramatically, you know, watchable.
Interesting, yeah.
Sustain a regular audience. So what's the one thing? Was it landing on the moon? Well, you know, as grand and wonderful an accomplishment that was, that's out there. That's the moon. That has nothing to do with UFO sightings here on planet Earth. If I were to proffer, you know, a suggestion, and I would challenge anyone to come up with another reason, another solution as to what is the one incident that placed America in charge of UFO investigations around the world, including even Russia.
Wow.
I would suggest Roswell.
Mm.
It's the biggest bargaining chip that any country could have. You know, you play ball with us. We're reverse engineering the technology. We're working on the technology. Sure. We have the technology. We have the hardware. We can kick the tires. You know, we have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's and true.
Everyone's going to be bowing at your feet because it's the ultimate, ultimate technology that mm-hmm. any one country could possess.
Sure.
And so until I learn of or I see evidence to support something else, I will go down just confident that Roswell is the impetus behind not only the cover-up to this day, but also the level of supremacy that it has afforded and provided the United States for now 72 years.
Mm-hmm. I actually witnessed a UFO myself, and so that's one of the reasons that I have such an interest in the topic. And it was actually, it was the flying saucer, the typical flying saucer. But the one...
You never told me this, Brent.
No, I know. We've never really had an opportunity to talk off the air because, you know, I mean, you're a busy guy and I don't want to bug you. But yeah, it's a true story. But now here's the interesting thing is that it was only visible in infrared. I was using infrared binoculars looking at the night sky up in the mountains near here. And I was just panning around, playing around. I'd never really played with them before. I was having a ball. And I panned around and looked down the driveway of the mountain cabin that I was at. And then panned up to the treetop level and just kept going because I was mostly interested in looking at the star field because you can see all the red stars with the night vision.
Absolutely. And absolutely.
It was just brilliant, but I got it like...
It's spectacular. It's like with infrared or with night vision, I mean, the sky is just one solid beach of stars.
Yeah, it's just spectacular. So I got about 30 feet above one of the big, I don't know what kind of trees these are out here. They're just conifer trees, but got about 30 feet above it, and there floating is the two pie plates, the proverbial flying saucer, except that had a little bit difference, is that it wasn't the sharp edge where the two plates come together. There was a gap in the middle there, and there was these panels in that center section that had a light going around. Yeah. And
that has also been described. In fact, I can think of even illustrations, and I'm thinking of one specific photograph that even seems to depict, you know, that very feature.
Yeah. And I was beside myself. I'm like, oh my God, you know, I've been enthusiastic about this my whole life. I was keeping my mind open. I just thought there's got to be something to this. There's too many people seeing this stuff, but I've always been looking and never seen it. So I looked at it for about 15 seconds, like, my God, I got to see this with my own eyes. I lower the binoculars, and there was enough ambient light. I could see the stars. I could see the treetops. But there was no craft. There was no craft there. It didn't exist. And I'm like, my God, it was giving off.
But there it was at the infrared level.
Yeah, and giving off light. It was flashing lights on the infrared level, too. So I put up the binoculars again. It's there. Bring them down.
And it was
not
there. Yeah. At what point was it gone?
Well, I decided to be gone first because I thought, you know, it was about probably 150 to 200 yards away from me. And I thought, my God, I'm about the only thing going on in this. God.
So that was, you're truly talking about a close encounter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was like
CE1.
Yeah. It was like right there. I mean, it was filling up the whole field of the, or a large portion of the field in the binoculars. And I was
Did you have a growing fear? Did you feel as though you were possibly being watched?
That's exactly what happened, is that I just realized I'm the only thing going on in this whole mountain valley. And I really was. There's nobody else in this whole mountain valley. It's this not desolate. There's other cabins around, but they're seasonal. And I was the only one up in this area. And I was like, I'm sitting here watching them, and they're probably sitting there watching
me.
They're
probably watching me.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I was like, I decided to go to bed. Well, that was the whole experience.
Wise thing.
Yeah, I think so too. But
I think a lot of people, they go, oh, no. I would have, you know, waved the flag, come and get me, or, you know, we come in peace as well, that type of thing. And
It was really crazy. But, it was such a surreal experience. But
no doubt.
It's one that I'm really – now, have you ever witnessed anything like that or anything?
We've all seen strange lights we couldn't identify, just especially being out in the country. I know for being out in New Mexico mm-hmm. late at night, you feel like you could just pluck the stars right out of the sky.
Oh, sure.
It's just glorious. And I hope everybody, you know, is able to share such an experience, at least at some point in their life. But nothing that I could say It was the inspiration for becoming fascinated with the topic. In my case, it was more the Kennedy assassination and all the talk at the time of the Warren report and it being labeled whitewash and cover up. And then years later, seeing that the UFO investigation, the official investigation by the Air Force, was being called the same thing, whitewash, cover up.
Yeah.
And one book leading to another. And I was always especially interested. There was a chapter in the book, Flying Saucers, Serious Business, by the late Frank Edwards. Mm-hmm. And it was a chapter entitled, Who's Driving? And it was all these occupant, these landing cases involving occupants, involving humanoids, and typically late at night, rural, secluded, and just, you know, individual witnesses. You know, as you describe yourself, Brent, where you'll go, oh my God, what am I witnessing here? And I better get out of here while I still have a chance.
Yeah.
And as a young boy, it it not only is like reading ghost stories, but it also it kept coming back to, what if just one of these stories is true?
Right.
And the thought that I would ignore that, I'd walk away from it and just wash my hands of, you know, the biggest story of the millennium.
Right.
We're not alone. How does anybody just, you know, walk away and just, you know, you give out a loud yawn and go, well, come back and talk to me when you have physical evidence. Mm-hmm. Well, as it's been demonstrated, the Pentagon, the Air Force and the Navy, they've been working on this again within recent years. You don't keep going back to something unless there's pay dirt, unless there's something actually there to investigate. And we have physical, electronic instrument tracking and radar tracking of these unknowns. We have landing cases involving depressions, interactions with the ground, with the vegetation, microwave effect as far as on the roots of the plant, you know, the life at the landing area. And then you have all the missing time experiences. And then at the very top, we have Roswell, where they have the actual crash of a craft of unknown origin. And here we are 72 years later, and our government is now up to 4 official explanations to the same event.
Yeah.
Which of the 4 do all the witnesses subscribe to their very deathbeds? And that's the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Capture the recovery of the actual flying saucer, the craft of unknown origin. And so what type of an investigator, what type of a researcher, what type of a human being would I be if I would go, well, it doesn't matter. You can't trust human testimony on anything.
Yeah.
Well, many a person has gone to capital punishment with nothing more than the testimony of a lone individual.
Mm-hmm.
I saw you do it. And if I can convince the jury that you did it, they will sentence you. History is, you know, comprised of nothing more than human eyewitness testimony. And so, again, we can't say all history is acceptable except Roswell, except UFOs.
It's
either all or none.
All right, we're going to take our last break, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be right back for the last half hour of the show. Don't go away. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here of the Paranormal Portal Podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. Thank you. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the last half hour of our show. It's absolutely flown by tonight, but as you can tell, that's a direct response to the phenomenal level of conversation we're having here on the show. It's it's an incredible journey. And again, our guest is Donald Raymond Schmidt, who is joining us and is one of the foremost investigators of the Roswell incident in the world and a very prolific UFO investigator on many accounts, but has written several books about that. Now, I did want to touch a little bit tonight on the materials, the metamaterials that are claimed to have been acquired by the TTSA Academy. And first of all, I suppose, one of the holy grail for you would be able to get your hands on some of that material in order, well, I suppose specifically to Roswell. I'm not sure where all of their alleged materials are coming from. What is your take on that whole deal anyway?
Well, we're informed that it's Bigelow Aerospace in Las Vegas, Robert Bigelow, that is housing some of this physical evidence that it is being stored at one of his plants in Las Vegas, and that it's being tested there as well. I joke that I knew Robert Bigelow when he was just a multimillionaire. And so he's well beyond that today. And he had expressed, he actually had been to New Mexico on a number of occasions and originally was very interested in the Roswell incident. I was at first concerned that they had acquired a piece, unbeknownst to us, a piece directly from Roswell, and we were not included in the loop, that they were keeping the secret from those of us who were, again, in the forefront of the investigation all these years. And I was relieved to hear that, no, that if we have physical evidence, and they're not denying that they have some physical evidence, it does not concern the 1947 incident. Okay. These are separate situations. So, okay, fine. The museum in Roswell, which I'm one of the co-founders, and I'm still an advisor to the board of directors. I'm an advisor to the director at the museum. We had offered $1 million reward about 20 years ago, and it was on the books for 5 years. If someone could provide us with a piece, with an artifact, physical evidence from a genuine UFO that would then be tested by 3 independent laboratories, and each one would conclude, would verify that it was an alloy composition of something not manufactured on planet Earth. One of the pieces that I know Tom DeLong had promoted and actually confirmed that they had paid $35,000 for to have tested. When we had offered $1 million from the museum about 20 years ago for that very piece, that identical piece, they would not turn it over for testing because it would have been tested independently by laboratories that they would not have selected, that they would have no control over the final disposition, the final outcome of the test results. And so to me, that threw up a red flag. Why are they now testing something that they refused to have tested when there was a much higher amount of money offered? Okay. Up front. But then I would suggest to your audience, whenever I'm asked, where's the wreckage? Where's the evidence today? And I would say, well, it's not with the military. They no longer have it. Mm. It's not with the government. They no longer have it. Where is it today? It's with the private corporations. It's with Bigelow Aerospace. It's with, we've had first-hand witnesses through the years at Rand Corporation, General Electric, Boeing, Lockheed, Hughes Aircraft, Bureau of Standards, all talking about having the wreckage in hand in an attempt to reverse engineer, break it down, test it, analyze it at the molecular level to see what makes it tick, what makes it so nearly indestructible, mm-hmm. for example. And so it actually comes back to what then President Dwight D. Eisenhower warned us all about, mm-hmm. the military-industrial complex. And that would be precisely what I'm pointing my finger at regarding the physical evidence recovered at Roswell. We have to always remember the government / military, they don't manufacture anything. Sure. Not a single plane, ship, tank,
right.
bullet, missile, nothing. It's all contracted out into the private sector. They have full reign over black ops, the special projects that develop and invent and come up with all of the new conceptual and innovative designs that we may first learn about 15 years after they were developed. And that's the case with the hardware recovered, not only at Roswell, but then thereafter, pertaining to the reality of the UFO phenomenon. So it's another reason that we need to be cautious, but yet we need to remain optimistic and hopeful that if disclosure is at hand, if this is about to break, we should not expect it from the government. We should not expect it from any branch of the military, including the Navy, that it could very well come from the private sector.
Mm.
And lest we forget what the late Ben Rich said when he made the comment. And Rich was the head of Skunk Works. I mean, the development of the Blackbird, the SR-71, and stealth technology, and Aurora, and projects that we won't even again know about for 10 years after their very deployment. Mm-hmm. When Rich made the comment that we today have the technology to fly ET home.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that's true, then the best is yet to come, ladies and gentlemen, mm-hmm. that we indeed may be on the precipice of a world that, if humans remain in control of our very destinies, that we may, have a world that is beyond our own earthly confines. And we finally, as you yourself, Brent, as far as looking through that infrared and seeing all those stars out there, mm-hmm. that, and how inviting. I mean, it's all out there. Yeah. And it's like, it's beckoning us to come and become part of the galactic neighborhood, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I think I agree. And I hope, I'm hopeful, very, very hopeful that we'll reach that point. I don't know. We all hear the stories of the breakaway space program and what are your thoughts about that then? If we have that technology, is it already existing? Do you have an idea?
Yeah. Well, you think now you look at the situation that we haven't really been back to the moon in almost 50 years.
Right.
Or so we believe, or so we've been told.
Sure.
And the thought that the argument, the ongoing debate, and the fact that it has even intensified, that whether we have even been to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And just yesterday, again, I read another report that NASA released that another negative side effect, a negative feature befalling deep space, zero gravity travel, prolonged zero gravity existence, are also blood clots, clots in the lungs, clots in even the brain. And is it setting us up for this argument? Well, we cannot send the manned mission to Mars. And before that, it was the radiation belt that prolonged exposure to that radiation is, you know, is not conducive to a healthy, sustainable life. There are there are astronauts, for example, that to this day they aren't right. Their nervous systems, their ability to move and be mobile and walk, you know, without aid are still somewhat hindered. So is it that we learned early on that space travel as we know it is not only impractical, but it's also dangerous, that we've decided we need to develop quicker, more efficient ways of traveling to our neighbors? Or is it that they gave up on it? And it's only in recent years, and Robert Bigelow, Bigelow Aerospace, who has the main contract with NASA for the manned mission to Mars, but Bigelow Aerospace. So that's more than coincidental, that the very person who is developing the technology for the first habitants to travel and occupy the planet Mars also is controlling the UFO hardware, the UFO technology.
That's a
coincidence?
Probably not.
I would probably beg to differ.
So what is your feeling about them, the two of the Stars Academy, entering into a research agreement with the military for these metamaterials that they have? Do you, to me, it just felt like a big red flag. Like, what the hell are they doing?
Of course. Especially when the likes of Tom DeLonge, who I keep checking. You know, has he ever been to New Mexico? No. Has he ever been to the museum in New Mexico? No. Has he ever talked to a single witness involved? No. Has he ever talked to any of the actual researchers involved? No. But yet he makes the proclamation that Roswell was nothing more than a recovered Nazi bell, German bell from World War II. Well, I'd love to see your sources. Who are your witnesses? Why are you the authority on this now? And why are you the spokesperson, you know, again, pushing me aside, and you're now the official, you know, spokesperson on Roswell? I beg to differ. Because we could help you, Tom, but you never came to us. If you're looking for answers, we certainly could place you in the right direction of people you need to go to, sources you need to go to. We need to, you know, file Freedom of Information Act requests, specifically spearheading individuals who, through the years, we've learned through their family members had access. We're at Wright-Patterson. We're at Roswell. We're at the Pentagon at the time and may have indeed had direct access to the physical remains. So I find in many ways they're just flailing in the dark. You're just seeing what's going to stick on the wall. And that's therein for me would be the red flags. The idea that these people, in many ways, they demonstrate that they want complete control. They want to be the king makers. And as a result, they do not acknowledge all those who have done all the spade work, who have laid, you know, all the groundwork leading to where they presently are. And I find that most unfortunate, and it has nothing to do with jealousy or bitterness as much as it's no different than when we had Roswell witnesses, principal high-ranking officers, and we went to the Clinton administration. And this was after Bill Clinton had expressed interest and curiosity in UFOs slash Roswell. And we went directly to the White House and said, well, what if we give you a witness? What if we give you 10 witnesses? See if we can get the... And deaf ears. And there was a disconnect. I was always wondering, you know, we're offering to provide you with the real thing. Genuine article. And then when it would came down to where the rubber is meeting the road, they weren't willing to take that step. And I find that to actually be the case also with, the same situation today, that they're going to the wrong people. They're talking to the wrong sources, or at least they're not asking our advice as to who else, who would we advise? Where should they still, mount an effort, put pressure on, and hope that there's additional evidence, additional hardware, and this team effort. Much of ufology for many years has not been a team effort.
No.
It's so many people jockeying for a little piece of a little pie.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I still maintain to this day, Brent, that if any one of us win, we all win.
Right.
We all win.
Mm-hmm.
I will not for a moment go, well, it should have been me.
Yeah.
Or I wish I was there. No, you have just validated. You have just substantiated everything that I have worked so hard to uncover, unravel for all these years. And you got to the finish line before me, and I will applaud you and say, mission accomplished. And if I helped in any way, thank you.
Yeah. Well, it's got to be a frustrating journey, I'm sure. But I can tell you that I agree, and I think what you're talking about in the UFO community is echoed all over. It's in the Bigfoot community. It's in the paranormal communities. They all have their I don't know if you call them sects, so SECTS or what, mm-hmm. but there's like these factions of people that seem to be competing, and that's really unfortunate because you got to wonder in some of those cases if it's not on purpose, just to obfuscate the truth.
You have to wonder often if we're dealing with useful idiots, who are they taking their marching orders from? What are, is it a personal agenda or is it a much greater scheme of things? I find, for example, many of the people right now who are so anti-disclosure, who believe that this is just all such nonsense today. They're the very same people who have been attacking Roswell and our efforts for years.
Mm-hmm.
Very same people. And so therein, I conclude that that their agenda is twofold. That it's to obfuscate, it's to stall for time, make sure that either they establish a greater ground hold of what's going on, that they then can take credit, take control, and receive all the accolades. They're not about to relinquish any of the praise that they feel should be all directed in their direction,
mm-hmm.
or they're working for the dark side.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're presenting, a pro-UFO front to infiltrate, when in reality, they're the contemporary moles who are working both sides. They're the double agent, so to speak.
Sure. Yeah, I think so. I want to make sure on the show tonight to give you some time to talk about your new book that's just come out, and to let people know about it and where they can get it.
Okay. Inside the Real Area 51, or UFO Secrets. This is the revised edition of Inside the Real Area 51. It's called UFO Secrets Inside Wright-Patterson. And before there was Area 51, long before there was Area 51, there was Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. It was the most secret military facility in the world, bar none. Post-World War II, 1947, it was the headquarters of the Foreign Technology Division. And all the captured armory aircraft from World War II, it would go to Wright-Patt for testing and analysis. If we so much as recovered a Russian MiG, it would go to Wright-Patt for testing and breakdown. So historically, it's a proven fact that the materials recovered at Roswell went to Wright-Patt for testing and analysis. It's not debatable. It's a proven historic reality that that's where the materials went. And the people who were there on the receiving end, whether the wreckage, whether the remains of the craft, or even more amazingly, the remains of the crew, the bodies, including the survivor, all went to Wright-Patterson. So we have all the witnesses there on the receiving end. And those are the ones that we've interviewed. Those are the ones we tracked down. And all of their fascinating, amazing accounts of what they witnessed, of what they observed, what they held in their hands, up to the very doctors who were involved in autopsies at the base at that time, all from Roswell. So in other words, this is Roswell part two. Okay. The incident, the crash, the recovery operation at Roswell. And then after everything was shipped out, where did it go? Wright-Patterson. And what became of it? Wright-Patterson. What was done with it? Wright-Patterson. And that is the central focus, the theme of the current book, UFO Secrets at Wright-Patterson, which is available at all fine bookstores, most notably Barnes & Noble, and certainly Amazon.com.
Excellent. And Donald, I can't thank you enough for coming back again. I'm absolutely thrilled that you made another visit here, and I anxiously look forward to getting your time again if you would bless us with another presence.
Of course, and I promise you next time, I'm sure you had a long list of questions that you had prepared, and the next time we will provide you with ample time to ask whatever you would like.
Oh, I love the journey we had tonight. I wouldn't change a thing. It was absolutely brilliant. And thank you for your time. And thank you to all of you out there for watching and being a part of the shows. Make sure to tune in next time. We'll always be here every night of the week, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We are doing a portal. So good night, everybody.
Hey, all. It's Don with the portal. Just wanted to take a second to say one more time, thank you all for joining us. We are happy to be able to put out this episode. We certainly do appreciate you being here with us, and we love you all. Thank you very much. You are the reason that we keep doing this, and we'd love to keep you along in our journey. And don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/paranormalportalradio. You can email us also at paranormalportalradio@gmail.com. And of course, our YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/paranormalportal. Once again, thank you all and have a great day.
sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.